Hello and welcome to BICOM's Hadion podcast. I'm Richard Pater, the director of BICOM in Israel, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Tal Schneider, who is not only a political and diplomatic correspondent for the financial newspaper Globes here in Israel, but she also has an extensive background before journalism in media law as well and litigation. So that's a very useful and timely expertise. So Tal, thank you very much indeed for joining me this morning.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to be focusing on the Attorney General's decision to indict the Prime Minister on these corruption charges and talk about some of the political and legal ramifications. If I can start with what I think is a relatively easy question. Reflecting on last night, the leader of Blue and White, Benny Gantz, laid out his proposal that the Prime Minister should resign, should clear his name in the courts of law, and then come back in 2 years' time as part of a rotation deal. Surely that's not going to happen, is it?
Well, that offer has been on the table since September 17th. It was people who vote for Blue and White, for them, this was the most logical offer for Benny Gantz to be prime minister first, because actually he won more votes than Netanyahu. You know, this is the first time it happens in 11 years that someone else other than Netanyahu win more votes. So that was logical, and also, you may say, kind of goes without saying. But obviously, the other side, the Likud party, wasn't even willing to discuss such an option. The main obstacle, of course, was Netanyahu did not want to be approached by the court as a former prime minister. He wanted to be starting his legal proceedings as a sitting prime minister. So this specific issue about being second on the rotation agreement was, for Netanyahu and for Likud, was really off the table. And I think it is off the table as we speak right now. They're unwilling to hear anything about it.
Yes, it seems from this view here, it seems unlikely to occur. If I can talk about some of the legal stuff for a moment, it's my understanding that by law, he now has a 30-day period of which the Prime Minister can theoretically request immunity from the Knesset. But this process is now complicated because of the political stalemate. There is no House committee to convene even to hear this. That the House committee, of course, has the authority to decide these things. Could you just talk us through how you see the next steps and the landmarks to look out for in the legal process?
So that's exactly what you said. The Knesset committee is responsible for the immunity. It is responsible for many things, among them the immunity. Now, the current Knesset can, if it wants to, arrange such a committee. The problem was that they didn't proceed with that because they were hoping to form a government first. Now that the government isn't formed, and, you know, as you, the listeners may know, we don't have a government as of April 19. So we are in a stalemate with no new government for so long. We actually are using the outgoing government. You can, if you want, form a committee. It's just a matter of, you know, political will to do it. And I think there is also right now, someone has already went to the high court and said to the high court, I mean, a citizen, not a political actor, a citizen went up to the high court and said, kindly obey them, make it clear to the Knesset that it has to put down, you know, arrange this committee and make it work. So we shall see. I think the High Court is trying very hard not to meddle in the political situation. It's very difficult because I think what Israel is experiencing right now is a severe constitutional crisis. It is a constitutional crisis not only on the stalemate or of the sort of equal results from both sides. It is also with respect to the functioning of so many bodies. You know, this committee, for example, other entities of the government that are supposed to be functional, legislator committees and so on. There's so many other functional bodies that are out of order now for almost 9-8 months.
So what will happen if there is no way to convene the committee? How will there be a process? Will that just be delayed in case, before he can advance this immunity, or will it be skipped over that stage?
Right. So the problem with the committee may be to our unfortunate situation. The problem with the committee may be set aside, because if we don't have a government within 18 days, we are going to another election as it is. So there's only 18 days to either, you know, if the government will be formed in 18 days, then the committee will be set and the problems will be, you know, all of the problems will be solved. But anyways, if we are not solving the government formation problem, then the law, the Israeli law, says the Knesset is dissolved by, you know, without any action. So it doesn't mean that the members of the Knesset are voting for dissolvement like they did back in May. It is now going to be dissolved by the law. And if it is dissolved by the law, then we will have another third election in March, after which all of the committees will have to be assigned again, depending on the results of the election, which we all think won't be very different.
So the whole process effectively on the legal track gets delayed because of the politics.
Right. This is what we call a constitutional crisis.
Right. Right. I mean, you mentioned the Supreme Court doesn't really want to get involved and engage in politics. The other issue, I suppose, which is also part of the constitutional crisis or confusion, is whether a prime minister under indictment, Netanyahu, can actually be even asked to give him the mandate to form the next government. Do you think that's legally problematic as well, or will the Supreme Court have to step in and give a ruling?
This is a bit complicated. Bear with me. I hope it's fine. I think so. Prime Minister in Israel, we are actually we are going by the British law, even though we changed our laws for so many times. So it's not really the British law, exactly the British law. But Israel Prime Minister can remain in power until conviction. The problem, that's according to the law. The problem with that Netanyahu is not really a sitting prime minister, because he lost twice with his ability to form a government. So he is now sitting as what we call interim prime minister, or the outgoing prime minister, right? There isn't anything, there isn't any vacuum in leadership. Even if someone lost elections, he's still the outgoing prime minister until the government is replaced, right? There isn't such a thing as vacuum here. So the question, does an interim or an outgoing prime minister can be considered as a regular prime minister for the purpose of this specific law that says a prime minister can be, you know, in his chair until convicted? That's a huge problem. And the thing is, some people do not want the High Court to be the one who makes the decisions on that specific questions. They rather have the Israeli public make those decisions. That makes sense, because you do not want the legal establishment of the State of Israel making such a severe and grave ruling, whereas you do want the political, you know, players, his opponent inside the Likud party, or his opponent from outside the Likud party, which is Benny Gantz. You want them to be able to kind of either push him out or agree to sit with him. And you do not want this resolved by judges who are not supposed to be part of this muddly political process.
Mm. But if we have a scenario where we do go to a third election and Netanyahu remains head of Likud and the results are similar, I know there's a lot of ifs there, but in that scenario, do you think the president would, his reading of the law would accept that Netanyahu is able to be given the mandate?
So this is exactly what Gideon Saar, Netanyahu's chief rival from within the Likud party, said last night. He said, after Netanyahu lost twice, twice in those elections, he was unable to form a government. We do not expect a third round to have any different results. This is crazy to think that he will be able to form a government if he hasn't done so for two times in 2019. So, I mean, according to the polls at the moment, if you look at the what is expected from the Israeli public, you know, based on public opinion polls. That's the only thing that we can, you know, get us, you know, get our assistance right now with, you know, kind of analyzing the situation. It seems as Netanyahu is not winning, and he's the second party, but not far behind, not very far behind. So the situation remains the same, which means he's unable to form a government.
But how do you think President Rivlin would respond in that scenario?
Yeah, I think President Rivlin will be very, very careful not to inject himself in the political question. If Netanyahu will bring, you know, huge numbers and would landslide, then Rivlin will give him the mandate to form a government, because, as I told you, the law doesn't say that he's prohibited from doing it. That's what my sense of the things. Having said that, it seems unlikely that this will happen. He already lost lots of his supporters back in September.
So just going, when you mentioned Gideon Saar, his rival in the Likud, his comments last night. Do you see that as a realistic scenario, that there'll be enough pressure within the Likud to force primaries in the Likud?
There might be some pressure, and enough pressure to form go ahead with the primaries in the Likud. But I have to tell you, I'm not pretty sure that Netanyahu will lose those primaries, because they have 120,000 party members, and those party members are pretty solid with their love and support for the prime minister. So it's not an open elections within the Israeli public. It is to be conducted within the same group that is, you know, has a huge support for him, and it is within the same people who are yelling now. You know, you see on the streets of Israel, some people are, you know, crying out loud that this is a coup, and this is, it goes against their logic, and they think the bribery charges are unfruitful. So, you know, those are the people. They might, you know, they might still vote for him, and the Saar may be the brave one, but also he may be losing those primaries.
And do you think there's any, there's speculation that the Likud could split a result of it? Do you see that as a realistic scenario? The Gideon Saar could take away, could form some of the faction and form a government with the blue and white?
If he does that, it has to be at least third of the party, which means around, they have 32 seats. I believe it's 11 seats. Because if he does it without the third, then he has major sanctions under the law with respect to finance law. So in order to get to the third count, it's kind of tough. Also, it seems unlikely to me that Gideon Saar will do something like that, because Gideon Saar wants to stay within the brand Del Likud. So it's not a smart political move for him to form something that is not the Likud, right? And start his new political life. It's not, it doesn't make sense.
And we're seeing, in terms of your gauging of public opinion here, I mean, we're seeing kind of the supporters of Netanyahu coming out in some numbers to demonstrate their support, and on the other side, kind of those who are appealing for him to step down immediately. Where do you sense the general public is in this, in terms of understanding, sympathy for Netanyahu's predicament?
I think the general public is torn. We did see a poll on Friday night saying 56% of the people think that he should. I want to be careful with the wording I use, because I don't have the poll in front of my eyes. But there was a big number of people that said that he probably should step down. But also, you do see a very stable support for the Likud party. You don't see any deterioration in the numbers of the party, the Likud party. It's a bit contradicting. So that means probably that many people still like the Likud, but they are not sure that he should, you know, remain in power with all the, you know, with all the things that are happening.
So, I mean, if, as you said, we have got 18 days left, and we're already in uncharted territory politically with this third stage of the election, so to speak. But with 18 days for someone to bring 61 signatures forward, do you think there's any chance of that happening?
I have to tell you, I went to Benny Gantz's event last night, and I was trying to talk to some people out there from his party, and they think that it is this is very unlikely to happen, that someone will come up with the 61 signatures, because as we just said, you know, within your questions and my answers, we noticed that Netanyahu has a really strong grip of the Likud. And with that, it seems that no one out there will, you know, come forward and do anything, and they will let the country go into a third election. We put some, you know, some of the way we look at things, we did not hear from several of the top politicians in the Likud, which is the chairman of the Knesset, Yuli Edelstein, and some other top ministers of Netanyahu. We did not hear from them anything since Thursday. That means that they are probably looking at the prospects of maybe, you know, doing something different than going to elections. But politically, I don't know how Edelstein and also Gilad Erdan and other top politicians like Nir Barkat, I'm not sure how strong they are within the Likud to really maneuver and, you know, be effective in making that change. So if they don't do anything, we will probably go to a third election.
Fascinating. Well, this is what we will continue to monitor. Tal, thank you very much indeed for your, your time today. That was very interesting.
Right.
Good
thank
luck with
you.
good luck with following it all.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
I'm now sitting with Dr. Amir Fuchs from the Israel Democracy Institute here in Jerusalem, one of Israel's leading think tanks and action tanks devoted to the preservation of Israeli democracy. Dr. Fuchs, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. For our listeners, for those of you, for those of us that didn't read the 63-page indictment, I wonder if you could first highlight kind of some of the most salient points, or perhaps what we learned that was new that we hadn't didn't know before about the investigations.
Well, I guess what is new is dependent of who wrote the draft of the indictment, because nothing is really new there. But we have to, if I can summarize the three charges. First charge is that Netanyahu is giving to Alovich, which is the head of Bezek, the biggest telecommunication company in Israel, and he's the Minister of Communication, and he's giving him regulatory benefits which worth to Alovich hundreds of millions, maybe more than a billion shekels. I will not go into the details, but he's giving him very, very important things for him, and you can see in the transcripts of things that Alovich is writing to his staff, you know, how much it is important for him. And on the other hand, Alovich is controlling a very popular news site in Israel, which is called Walla, and Alovich is actually giving Netanyahu whatever he wants on coverage on that Walla site, and this site is actually enslaved to Netanyahu's and Netanyahu family, Netanyahu's wife, Netanyahu's son. They actually control a lot on what is happening there, although every journalist there feels like they are dealing with everyone knows it's bad and it's wrong. Or if you take seriously what journalism is, they dictate the material to the editors there, and they control the whole site. So it's not really, you know, just someone is giving something to a journalist and the journalist giving him back a nice article. And a lot of people are saying, wow, what this can happen all the time, that people give information and in favor they get a nice picture. This is over years that Netanyahu as a minister is giving them benefits that worth hundreds of millions, and on the other hand, what he is getting, not an article. He is controlling this whole site. This is what the prosecution says it's bribery, this is quid pro quo. This is the biggest allegation. We have two more allegations in the indictment in the offense of breach of trust. They were on the brink of becoming bribery also. But because I think that the Attorney General was prudent and he wanted to go only with what he's sure of, he said it's only breach of trust. First is the issue about, they call it case 2000, the issue of Yediot Acharonot, which is the biggest and most famous, most important newspaper in Israel, and also the most important news site, Ynet. What the Attorney General has is tapes of meetings of Netanyahu with the owner of Yediot Ahronot and Ynet, Noni Moses, which is considered to be one of the powerful, most powerful men in Israel, and was considered one of the biggest enemies of Netanyahu because Yediot Ahronot and Ynet are critical of Netanyahu. And basically what they're talking about there is, again, a deal that Yediot Ahronot would be less critical or even more positive on Netanyahu. And on the other side, Netanyahu will do his best to help Yediot Ahronot with their competition, which is the newspaper Israel Hayom, which is supportive of Netanyahu. But Netanyahu knows he can influence Sheldon Adelson, which is the owner of Israel Hayom. And he also can help them, because he's prime minister, he can help them with passing the law that was supposed to stop or influence the popularity of Israel Hayom, because it now it's free, and the law was supposed to make it something that cannot be free. So again, we have a deal that deals with communication with the media. The Attorney General was convinced, or at least he had a doubt, that Netanyahu didn't really want to go with this deal. So he was just making himself, he just wanted to see what Noni Moses would give him, but he wasn't really there. So he is only charged with breach of trust, but Noni Moses is accused with offering bribery. This is the second charge. The third charge is a series and years of receiving presents from tycoons, from people who are very wealthy, that Netanyahu received, worth hundreds of thousands of shekels. It's cigars and suits and champagne for his wife. And they see that it's not really given him as presents, that someone just comes and gives a present. They actually demand it. They want it, they have codes for it. It's a chain of supply that the Netanyahu family receives from these tycoons. In addition, these tycoons also have deliberations with the government. And some, again, without getting into the details, Netanyahu in some instances is helping them here and there. It's not the same as the first accusation. So because there is no very clear link like there was in the first accusation between what is given and what Netanyahu is doing, it's not bribery. But it is very clear, according to the Attorney General, and I can, for myself, I can say, if I see, if all the facts will be proven, I think it's very easy to convict on this accusation of breach of trust. About the bribery, again, the Attorney General wanted to be safe, so he didn't accuse him with bribery, although I know a lot of jurists who say this is also clear bribery. He said only breach of trust, and only is, you know, breach of trust is also a corruption offense, which people sometimes go to jail. It's 3 years imprisonment maximum, and not everyone are going to jail for breach of trust only, but we have cases for that, and we have cases that, for example, Lieberman was accused with breach of trust, and he left his office as the Minister of Defense for a few years until he was acquitted. We have, it's an important and grave offense as itself, but of course, when you have bribery, then breach of trust looks like the easy accusation, but it's a big accusation as itself. This is it. This is what Netanyahu is accused of.
Thank you. And I mean, Prime Minister Netanyahu has been very critical of the legal process in looking into the investigations. What do you make of his claims?
It's mostly empty accusations. It's not easy to say that, but that's it. His accusations sometimes sound really like, you know, day-to-day people who are accused or are investigated, and they claim all these things, and most of them are just empty. I'm not saying that everything there was clean. There are things that, you know, people ask questions, and these questions will be developed in the court, and maybe some of the evidence can be challenged. But at least, for example, the issue of state witnesses. There are issues about how they were manipulated to become state witnesses. Well, we have a long process of nobody becomes state witnesses, you know, just from his own will. And there are verdicts that say what is fair and what is not. And maybe if it will be decided that it was not fair, then some of what the state witnesses will say will not be considered as evidence. But the fact is that they become state evidence, not state witnesses, not for what they say, but for what they brought. They brought hard evidence. They brought phone calls. They brought papers. And this cannot be take down these evidence, because in Israel we don't have the poison fruit issue. I mean, the testimony itself can be unreliable of the state witness, but if he brought strong evidence, hard evidence, this cannot be reversible. So we'll have to wait and see. And I don't say this is a 100% conviction. Every criminal case has his weaker sides, and I only read the indictment. I don't know all the defense claims and all the things that they are going to present in court. Nobody knows. But I really believe that when a case passed, it's not a lot of people say, how can just one man decide on some so important issue, and maybe it will actually force the Prime Minister to resign. This is what we will probably talk about later. But it's not really one man. It's a really big pyramid. It starts with the police investigators, and after that, the prosecution, the first people from the prosecution. After that, the state attorney. And it took years. It took 3.5 years, and only after that you go to the attorney general, and then there's a hearing, which the defense lawyers come and present their case. So it's not really, and the final decision is by the attorney general, but after deliberation with a really big team of the state attorneys. So this is the decision of the system. It's not a decision of one man. And at least I am sure that they did it with no ill will, and they're not corrupt, and all these accusations are really ridiculous about that they are sowing him a case and all that. Excuse me, no way. But if maybe they were wrong there, or maybe this is not strong case, I cannot tell.
So now we have the Attorney General's indictment. Where does the process go from here? Who has jurisdiction to cover the next stage?
Okay. Well, because of our crazy constitutional situation, there are a lot of questions here, but what is clear is that the indictment should be issued as long as Netanyahu is still prime minister. The indictment should be issued to the district court in Jerusalem, and it will be decided before three judges. But the fact is that it's not really going issued today to the court. Today, it was sent physically to Netanyahu and to the chairman of the Knesset, because Netanyahu has 30 days to ask for immunity from the Knesset. And in regular days, we'll say, okay, after 30 days, if he didn't ask, then it is presumed that he waives his immunity. And if he asks, then the House Committee will decide it, and after that the plenum, and that's it. But the fact is, because the crazy situation that we are in, there is no House Committee. And there is a question here, what happens now? And we have some kind of a precedent because of Chaim Katz, who was a minister, and after that only an MK. He asked for immunity before the election of September. And Eyal Inon, the advisor of the Knesset, and I think rightly so, because it was a few days before the election, he said, well, it's not logical to form the House Knesset for this issue a few days before election. Of course, after the election, the whole formation of the Knesset, the committee, is not really representing the outcome of the election. Then let's wait after the election. And meanwhile, he said, it's not logical that the Attorney General will issue the indictment because he didn't get his right to ask for immunity. Now, everybody interpret that, or a lot of people interpret that, as if now we can never accuse anyone until there is election. And if there is another election, then the whole process is now waiting for 6 months. I don't agree with that. And we issued a position paper, and some other people say that also. The outcome is unreasonable.
So what do you recommend?
Okay, so what we wrote there is, first, we don't think that what people understood from this letter is actually like a precedent, because it was on the specific situation that we were a few days before the election. It doesn't mean that you cannot form the Knesset committee. You can. The Knesset can form a Knesset committee. And we think that not only she can, she should, because the law says that when the indictment is sent to the chairman of the Knesset, it should be, and there is a request for immunity, it should be dealt with immediately. And because of that, the Knesset should and have to form the Knesset committee, the House committee. And it is even politically possible, because now who is the Kahol Levan, black and white,
blue
and white, they are controlling the transitional committee. So the committee can form a House committee. So this is an option. And if there is a House committee, then at least this problem is solved. But if still the Knesset will refuse to do that, then maybe there will be a petition to the court to force her to do that. Or maybe, also we said that maybe the Attorney General can just go and issue the indictment to the court, because actually the default is that there is no immunity. It's not that there is an immunity to remove, like we had in the past. Mm. Now, there is no immunity. There is a process for asking for immunity. But if the Knesset is actually refusing to do that, and the Knesset, the whole idea of immunity is that the Knesset is protecting one of its members from a persecution of the Attorney General or something like that. So if the Knesset believe that they don't want to use their power, maybe the Attorney General could just go and issue the indictment. It's an open question. It's not clear that he has no authority to do that after the 30 days has passed and there is no start, at least, of procedure. But I think the best way to solve this is to form a committee, and there is no legal problem of forming a committee to deal with it's also Netanyahu and also Chaim Katz, and maybe we'll have more. There is the issue of Aryeh Deri, there is the issue of Litzman. We'll have to see how many people are waiting for this request for immunity, as long as they will ask for it. So if we will have a request for immunity, the Knesset will have to deal with it immediately. And it will take, I guess, a few days or a few weeks. And then let's assume if there is no immunity, then that's it. We go to court. And if we go to court, we have to understand in Israel, a criminal case takes a few years. This is how it takes. 2 years, 3 years, something like that. If they do give him immunity, it's not really the end of the story, because the Supreme Court can intervene with the immunity. It's not just a political decision. It's a decision of the Knesset as a quasi-judicial body. They have to actually look at the evidence. They have to think if there is ground for immunity. The grounds are written in the law. It's if there's persecution, or if there is really big risk to the Knesset that the Knesset will not be able to perform or something like that. And if the Supreme Court will think that they were wrong, it can reverse the decision. It happened in the past with decision of removing or with decision of not removing immunity. And so there will be a petition. It will take time. But I think that after that, then again, we go to court. So we have a long process ahead of us. And it's pretty, I have to admit that looking at it now, that we are only starting this procedure after 3.5 years of investigating and deciding process within the prosecution and attorney general. This is unreasonable. 3.5 years just to start a procedure that can take 3 years or 4 years. It's crazy. I think it doesn't have to be dealt with on this specific case, but I think we have to rethink this procedure, mainly the whole procedure of starting and investigating and deciding, because a criminal case has a nature of dissolving in time. The evidence becomes weaker and weaker, and people, the witnesses, they forget things, and things and also the whole need of the public becomes less and less. Well, this all happened like 6 years ago when the court will decide on what is the verdict. This is like an old story. Mm. The criminal procedure should be quicker, and I think we should think about it.
How concerned are you about Netanyahu's attacks on the legal system?
I'm very concerned about it, but it's not new. I mean, it's just another level. He was attacking each level when it got to that level. When it was the police, then he attacked the police. After that, it came to the prosecution. He attacked the prosecution. Now it came to the attorney general. He attacked the attorney general. And you always could see that they always see, well, this is just the police. I'm sure when it gets to the prosecution, then everything will go out. Now, I'm sure that the attorney general, I totally think that he has the capacity to decide. But whenever you are passing each threshold, they are always, now they delegitimize this threshold. And now they also say, well, I'm sure nothing will be in court. And after there will be the decision of the court, then there will be delegitimization of the court. So yes, it is very disturbing. It's devastating when you see a head of state attacking the bodies which represent him, which in day-to-day, the attorney general, this is a problem of its own, but our attorney general holds a few hats. He's also the head of the prosecution, but he's also the head advisor of the government. He sits in government hearings and a week ago, when the cabinet was thinking of what to do with the security situation, Mandelblit sits there. I think it's a problem, of course, but so we're in a situation that Netanyahu is actually accusing the man who sits with him and was his cabinet secretary of his former government for years. He nominated him to be attorney general, and now he says that they are all corrupt and they sowing the cases, and this is of course absurd. Mandelblit cannot be accused of being, you know, part of any interpretation of opposition to Netanyahu or having leftist political views. On the contrary, he defines himself as a revisionist of a Jabotinsky guy. It's clear that he comes from the other side, and it's also true, I'm not sure about political, but it's also true that Netanyahu is the one who appointed the head of police, which he after that attacked Al-Sheikh, which is also, you know, someone who doesn't look like a leftist who only wanted to get down Netanyahu. So all these accusations really look absurd, but they have influence on the people, we don't really see, you know, a majority that is convinced. We don't see a majority that is convinced by these accusations, but it convinces a big public, big part of the public, and this is why we're worried. Yeah.
One last question. I mean, about the kind of the constitutional predicament that Israel finds itself. In your assessment, would if you would have the numbers, would the president be able to ask the prime minister under indictment to form a government?
This is the biggest problem. This is the biggest question now. Can a prime minister perform with an indictment, and also can he be the nominee to form a government? We all already have a precedence, and it's from the time of Aryeh Deri, that a minister cannot hold his office while he is indicted with corruption. So the question is this precedent holds also for a prime minister, which is a minister, but of course a special minister. Now, it's true, and a lot of people say, well, the basic law of the government says he can hold his office until there's a final verdict of the court. But it's not really accurate. What is written there is that when there is a final verdict of the court, he has to step down. It doesn't necessarily say what happens before. And of course, this is a question of what should the court do and judicial activism about that. But we cannot ignore that the court already did this with ministers, although the law doesn't say anything about ministers being indicted. So it's basically the same question, but with different outcomes, because we always said, when people ask this question for years now, what will happen when there is an indictment? Some people say, well, of course, if a minister cannot be indicted and continue to perform, also the prime minister cannot do that. But on the other side, the outcome of a prime minister stepping down is a collapse of the whole government. And the minister is not the same. Minister can go and come back. It's not irreversible. But to make it even more complicated, this government now is already a government that collapsed. If Netanyahu is resigning, nothing happens, actually, because this government already resigned. So it's not like, oh, we will have to go for election. We're already going for election, or we already went for election, so we just have to go against to the president to form a government. So it's less dramatic of a situation that the court is actually firing a prime minister. He's already fired. So it's still a big question. I'm not saying it's very clear, but at least my opinion is that he cannot form a new government with this indictment. But the court might decide otherwise. What is important is to understand that it's not an easy question, like some of the people who are speaking from a more conservative point of view, they say, well, it's very clear, this is what is written in the basic law, you are trying to go against the basic law, this is judicial activism. Well, no. What is now is the question is it unreasonable for the president to give the nomination to someone who holds an indictment with bribery? This is the question. And the law doesn't say nothing about this kind of transitional prime minister. It's dealing with an acting prime minister. It's not totally the same.
Well, we will continue to monitor it. Yeah. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.